Welcome to Baiterson. We make up stories improvised and recorded live. We start each story by choosing a random phrase from a source of text. My name is Ben, and my source is the Feynman Lectures on Physics by Richard Feynman.
My name is Drew, and my source is Envisioning Information by Edward R. Tufte.
My name is Mike, and my source is Watership Down by Richard Adams.
We will now choose a performer at random. That performer is...
me, Drew. So I'm going to open to a random page here in Envisioning Information by Edward R. Tufte and find a spot on the page. Noise is costly. Noise is costly.
Fabian was a music producer whose signature style was to incorporate sounds of the household, like a washing machine kind of churning, or the rumbling of a dryer or a vacuum cleaner, and turn them into an instrument for pop songs. And you could recognize where it came from, but it was also adapted in such a way that it blended with the song.
And at one time, a couple years ago, he had been hot. Like, everybody was calling him. His phone was ringing off the hook. And he was reflecting on this one afternoon while he sat at his desk and no phone was ringing. His computer was just flying toasters passing by.
He had, for the better part of this year, tried so hard to get outside of himself. He knew that his whole thing was household noises, and that was the thing that had propelled him to fame, and that had been his meal ticket. But it was also the extent of his creative inspiration, his creative universe. He kept trying to think, like, what's another kind of thing like that? What's another idea like that? And no matter how hard he tried, he could not get outside of the household noises, even though he knew that maybe that time had passed where they were desirable. So he thought he's going to take some extreme action to try to shake himself out of this block. So he shut his computer and he grabbed his keys, and he grabbed his phone, and he just walked out the front door without a plan.
He walked and walked and walked, and he found himself listening to everything he heard, and like he was looking for literally the next household noise. He heard conversation, and he heard traffic, and he was like, I'm being too literal. I got to get out of the whole listening thing. I got to get out of my mind so I can get back into it. And he went to a park and he sat down and he decided he stuffed his ears with leaves and he just stared at the pond and these ducks and this mother and daughter across on the opposite bank who were tossing breadcrumbs to this family of ducks.
And he realized as he was sitting there that he could hear that scene. And it wasn't that he knew what ducks sounded like. He knew what conversation sounded like between a mother and a daughter. It's not just that he could hear and he could imagine that. He could hear a song that was that scene. That, not that literally, but he could, you know, he was experiencing the scene as music. And so he rushed back
up his cell phone and opened the voice recorder app. And it just scattered into it, like trying to translate the whole arrangement of the song in his head through just his singular voice and this gibberish syllables. Had to get it down somehow. And then he stood up and he yelled across to the pair, the mother and daughter, and he said, "Thank you, thank you."
And he turned and he started running out of the park. Hustling, maybe a better term. He was going quickly, though. He felt like that recording wasn't enough. He needed to get to his studio. And as he was running, his cell phone buzzed in his pocket. He pulled it out. It was his best friend, Wilhelm. And he answered it really quickly and said, "I'm onto something," and then hung up and kept running.
And he's running, and he just, that moment with the ducks and the mother and the daughter and this thing had unlocked something in his mind. Everything he saw. He saw a car passing by and it swerved around a pedestrian, and he felt this fully realized song just burst into his head. He saw
how
somebody
it feels to be the driver, how it feels to be the pedestrian, how it feels to be the car. It was all packed into the song in his head.
And it's just happening over and over again, every single thing he says. And he just can't believe it. He spent years just listening to Household Items, so focused on the hearing, and realized it's just all of a sudden it was like a new dimension of the world had opened up. And he felt like this was it. This was the thing that was going to bring him back to inspiration and success.
And it did. He got in the studio. He recorded the duck song, he recorded the traffic song, he recorded these memories would come up from his own life, stories that Wilhelm had told him. He recorded 25 songs in 4 days and he put them out for free on the internet. And like the whole world changed. He truly had tapped into a gift, and his music was more popular than ever. He wrote a book called Seeing Music because he wanted other people to have that same ability. He taught classes, he did TED Talks, but nobody else could do it.
And at the peak of his fame and his excitement and his inspiration, he went back to that park and he was just staring around. He was so invigorated now as he was walking around and looking at things. And so he was always just staring to take things in and take things in. And he was gazing around. He was thinking about this place where this whole new chapter of his life had begun. And he was thinking about how he was riding so high, even higher than he had been before. And he was looking around. He wasn't paying attention. And he actually stumbled over a duck. He was in the same area. He tripped over a duck and fell face forward into a little like 12-inch landscaping fence with barbs on the top, and drove the spikes, just punctured both of his eyeballs, put both of his eyeballs out in this freak accident.
People screamed because because it was horrifying, and two, because people knew who he was.
He was live streaming his walk in the park.
There were always people now in the park doing things, trying to see if they would create a song in his mind. But he only heard a faint muffling because he was wearing his earplugs, as he always did when he went in the park, and just a shooting white pain in his eyes.
And he fell into a major depression. Wilhelm moved into his house, and then Fabian ended up moving into Wilhelm's house because it was too long. Wilhelm is like, I can't do this anymore. I need my own routine again.
He spent a ton of money doing this experimental eye surgery to try to put his eyeballs back in, and then he tried to do an eye transplant, and then he got an infection in his nasal cavity. He actually lost.
And in his navel.
And his navel traveled. There's a nerve connecting cavity. The two, and it traveled all the way down. So he lost his nose and his belly button. He lost the whole belly button.
He just had a smooth belly, and he like, no one wanted to have sex with him. They thought it was so weird. There should be a divot there, they said.
And he would say things like, "I'll wear a shirt," and it just didn't matter. The damage was done. So much prejudice against this.
Wilhelm was eventually the only person that he had left. Fabian, he had no sex life. He was not making any music. And of course, almost every fan is a Fairweather fan. If you stop doing what you want them to do, you know, they found some other person to devote their listening lives to. And Fabian, in the midst of his depression and his anger about being celibate, alienated everyone else that was close to him. Wilhelm was the only person who would still put up with him, who knew him from the childhood days.
He wrote a couple of songs in that period, but they were mostly thinly veiled expressions of anger towards ducks. And they just didn't catch on. He couldn't see the music anymore. And they just felt uninspired.
So one day he's in the apartment and Wilhelm is saying, "Hey, look, man, ever since the accident and ever since Letitia, you've really been just down. You basically haven't gone outside since the accident. You know, it's all been hospitals and your apartment and my apartment and Letitia's apartment very briefly. You gotta get out of here, man. You're just spiraling downward." And Fabian thought, okay, yeah, you're right. And so he got up and he went outside, and he had been so intensely visually focused over those years where he was translating vision into music that he had memorized the city extremely well. So he was very good at navigating his area around where he lived and Wilhelm's where Wilhelm house. Lived. You know, they lived close without his sight. So he went back to the park. And he was just kind of wandering around. He was just craving the sort of experience that he'd had before. And he realized in all his time there, he never touched anything. He never felt anything. So he started reaching around and he was feeling the bark on the trees and feeling the grass and feeling the dirt in his fingers. And lo and behold, all of a sudden his mind just erupts. As soon as he starts to get this sensory experience, this flood of inspiration comes back to him and these songs just start pouring into his head.
And he pulls out his phone and records. He's rushing back to his apartment with like perfectly articulated 90 degree angle turns because he knows exactly where he's going. He gets back to his studio. He records the songs. And again, it's an overnight sensation.
And he touches everything in his house. He just makes wider and wider concentric circles from there, touching everything, releasing music based on it. He writes a book called Touchy Feely. And
Touchy Feely Heery.
He even writes this insane metal number about like the feeling of his eyes getting punctured. Like he goes back to that.
He's crossing genres. He's mixing different kinds of music. He's really a pioneer.
And it's been even more success than before. It's the comeback comeback.
But at the same time, he's getting rejected by all of these potential romantic partners because as soon as they see him and he builds trust up and all this stuff, and he feels like he's like, okay, this is someone I can show my lack of a belly button to. But
he tries to prepare them. He's always saying,
"It won't be that big of a deal."
There's something you should know, like,
but he gets rejected every time. Every time it comes, he can't believe it. So he goes to this surgeon, the world's leading belly button reconstruction surgery, and he's made a bunch of money. So he's decided he's going to do this. He's going to fix this thing because this is like plaguing him and his love life. And he has the surgery, and something goes wrong, and they sever.
When he wakes up from the surgery,
sever a nerve.
He can't feel the nut from his fingertips to his toes. Nothing. There's no physical sensation.
He can walk. He can walk, and he can function. He just can't. He can't feel anything. His total sense of touch is gone.
At first, he thinks it's the anesthesia, but it just doesn't wear off. He's constantly like reaching out, and just nothingness. Just like. There's an object there, but no sensation of it.
And he files a malpractice suit against the surgeon, who has really good lawyers, so it fails, and loses all of his fans again. They move on to something else.
He and Wilhelm have to move to a smaller apartment because Wilhelm is basically caretaking him at this point.
And the surgeon was
such a deep depression.
The surgeon was a real crook and like charged him basically his whole fortune for what turned out to be a botched surgery. And Fabian's like, he doesn't get too down about it though. He's like, all right, from hearing to sight, sight to touch. He goes to a Ponderosa and goes through the buffet and fills up his plate with all the food that they have. And he stuffs it into his face. And he's just like, I'm savoring every taste, opening my mind. And
but what he hadn't thought about was the fact that he had lost his nose had eliminated basically his sense of taste. And so he's
he realized halfway through this plate that he wasn't tasting anything, and he's crying and he can't, and then he's stress eating because he's so upset, and he's wailing and screaming while stuffing food down his throat, and he chokes. He can't breathe. And he slaps the table. He can't see anyone. He can't tell if anyone's coming to help him. He's drumming on the table. He's panicking. He can't make noise with his voice.
And he gets
the same. And then he feels some arms go under his armpits and lift him up. And a pair of hands go around his belly and squeeze and squeeze and squeeze. And it ejects the food that was lodged in his throat. And he says, thank you. Oh, gosh. And he sits down and he keeps crying. He just face down into the food and weeps. And he says, it's all over. I can't smell. I can't taste. I've lost it all. And he feels a hand on his back. And another hand pulls the earplug out of his ear and says, you may not remember me, but I was feeding ducks with my mom like 10 years ago, and you were watching us, and then you jumped up and said, thank you. And then I've watched you had this really bizarre career. and I'm like maybe the one person that never really got into your music, but I'm wondering if like you need a friend right now.
And he just says, yes. He says, that would be amazing. And she invites him over, and
her name is Sarah.
Her name's Sarah. And they're sitting there in her kitchen, and she's just saying, you know, you've really had quite a journey. You know, what do you think is next? And he just says, I don't know. I think I've done everything I can do with music. I think that's probably all behind me now. And she says, wow, that's like a real shame, because you were clearly a genius and, you know, a real star of your generation. And he says, yeah,
it wasn't for me really, but you know, other people liked it a lot.
And
he's like, you made that pretty clear. She mentions it every time his fame comes up. Like, I never hit the spot for me.
And he's just sitting there, and he's like, yeah, I don't know what comes next. And I've just gotten used to the idea that you just gotta, I don't know, you keep searching, and eventually something will present itself. And she says, yeah, I hear that. Hey, do you want a smoothie or something? And he says, yeah, sure. And she goes and starts chopping stuff up and puts in the blender and turns the blender on. And his ears kind of like perk up, and she goes over and turns the faucet on and off a few times, and it's kind of squeaky, and she knocks some box of rice on the floor, and she starts sweeping it up, and all of a sudden all these household noises are coming into his ears, and he jumps up and says, thank you.
And runs out. It runs out. And she's like, I've got this huge blender full of smoothie. Like, but he runs straight back to the tiny apartment. He throws open the door. He says, Wilhelm. And Wilhelm is like,
Wilhelm knows the look at this point.
Yeah.
He's like, oh boy. And he sits down and he makes some music that he loves and
very few other people do.
But he sends a copy to Sarah, and she writes back and says that she loves it too. The end.
Baderson Stories are improvised and recorded live over the internet. We clean up the audio, but we don't edit, rehearse, or redo any content for better or worse. Subscribe and find other stuff we do at Baderson.com. And remember, when you tell a story, you hear the music.